AM, the Washington, D.C. home of Navy Athletics and your source for federal news now. This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And I'm Jim Russ.
And I'm just back after a week of celebrating the big Ravens win at the Super Bowl.
Are you doing this to hurt me?
No. Oh, you weren't for the Ravens, real?
No.
Okay.
Now that you have Baltimore ties, were you rooting for the Ravens?
Well, we've got a Baltimore campus.
Of course,
I'm rooting for the Ravens.
Go
Ravens, mm-hmm. Yeah, because we've got Baltimore ties up there. And it later in the show, I'm going to talk about what actually caused that power outage.
Oh, I can't wait to hear this.
It was actually a device that they installed to protect against power outages, and it failed.
This was the headline, but I never heard the details. So I'm interested to hear exactly
what this is. Yeah, we'll go through the details. And then, you know, of course, the Super Bowl ads. We'll talk about only the technology ads.
Some of them were just gross.
The GoDaddy ad.
That was awful.
Yeah, you already know that's the grossest ad. But yeah. I'll talk about two or three of those ads.
Okay.
But it was an interesting week. And, of course, tomorrow is Chinese New Year.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
So, people are having big blowout celebrations.
You have big plans for that?
No. I have a big plan, but now I'm just going to sit at home and just relax.
Are you going to I was going to say, you're going to have like a big parade down your street or something like that?
No, but later in the show, I'm going to talk about what it is. Why is Chinese New Year at a different time than regular New Year? And
that's
what it is about the Chinese calendar?
Sure.
So I'll give a little bit of calendar technology.
I always wonder about this.
So talk about the different kind of calendars, mm-hmm. and how they all work. It'll be an interesting thing. And lots of they had a big arrest this last week. One of the big guys who was leader of the group that did that DNS hijacking malware a few months ago, that actually these guys ended up making millions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
The guy was actually arrested, and he was exported to the United States.
Oh, really?
For trial.
Ooh.
Kind of an interesting thing.
Mm-hmm.
So there's quite a few things that are going on this week that were interesting. And of course, the guy we're going to feature in Profiles in IT is the man who's invented email.
Ooh.
He wrote the first program for email. And of course, as always, it was a huge, huge mailbag.
It gets bigger every week.
There's a letter in your mailbox.
Here, let me put this mailbag up here.
Don't hurt yourself.
No, thank you.
Because you aren't covering under workman's
comp. I've got to be very careful.
Yes,
yeah,
you do.
That's right. We're going to have to get some help in here. We got an email from Steve in Potomac. Dear Dr. Schertz, who provides the fastest internet service to households? Is it Fios, Comcast, Dish, or DirecTV? Now, this is important since the rates vary widely. Yes, they do. You kind of get what you pay for. Also, could you spell UMA? And that you described this last week. Thanks for bringing the wealth of information to us less literate in technology. Really enjoy learning about Mr. Woodland, the inventor of the UPC, Steve in Potomac, Maryland. Well, Steve, let's talk about speeds. First of all, satellite is always slower than any sort of wired connection. So Dish and DirecTV are going to be slower than Comcast and Fios. Now, it turns out that Comcast uses coaxial cable to connect to your house, and Fios uses fiber optics. So in terms of pure bandwidth, the fiber optics is going to have more bandwidth than the coaxial cable.
Mm-hmm.
But the real bottleneck for both Comcast and Fios is on the backhaul. After they bring together all of these residential connections, they've got to basically connect to the internet backbone through their backhaul, and that's normally where the congestion occurs. And Comcast in certain areas has very good backhaul connections, in other areas they don't. Probably if you look across the country, Fios has gotten the best reviews overall. And because they've tended to scale their system as they've scaled the number of users. I've got Fios. I'm really quite happy with it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as far as UMA, that's, of course, a voice over IP system. That would be OOMA. And you can go to OOMA.com, UMA.com. And that's actually just a simple box that converts your phone conversation into voice over IP. It turns it into packets for the internet. And really all you do is just take that box, that UMA box, plug it into your router that, you know, that goes to your internet service provider, and then plug your phone system into that box, and bingo, you've got voice over IP. Now what I did, I bought the UMA box. It was around $225. And I have free phone calls throughout the U.S., you know, all the continental U.S. is free phone calls. I only have to pay the federal taxes on that, which is, you know, a whopping $15 a year.
That's not bad.
That's all I pay. So once I, now and then, what I do, all my long distance calls are like at Skype rates. So mm-hmm. I just have a I just used my credit card, and I prepaid that with like $50. And so whenever I go to India or wherever I'm traveling, you can just pick up the home phone and call me. It's very sure. easy. So actually, I love UMA. And so I really – then what I did, I transferred my landline to the UMA servers, and then I canceled my Verizon phone service. So now I don't really have a landline anymore, but – it appears as though I do because I still have my same phone number. So that was I really like that. It's given me great quality overall, mm-hmm. and people who call me can't even tell I've got it.
Wow.
So we got an email from Margaret in Bethesda. Dear Dr. Schertz, I have an iPhone 5. It's black with 16 gigabytes. And I've got a Verizon plan that started October 2012. I really found out I don't use it very much.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the plan that I've got with Verizon is 450 minutes during the day, during the weekday, and I get free weekend calls and blah, blah, blah. Now, it costs me $80 a month. Now, the problem is I'm not using it. I'd like to unload it now, but I've got a two-year contract.
Oh, that's a problem.
She said, didn't anybody buy this? Think I could sell my contract? Well, Margaret, look. Nobody's going to buy a contract. First, and I also
can't
don't
even sell a contract.
I also don't think that Verizon would transfer the uh-huh. your contract. I think you're just stuck. If you got a 2-year contract, $80 a month, so that would be, let's see, that's $800 in 10 months, and so it would be $960 a year. So it's uh-huh. almost $2,000. Now what they did though, they sold you your iPhone 5 for $200, and actually it's a $600 phone. So you managed to buy, you got a $400 discount on your $600 phone, and it only cost you $2,000.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of the dynamic of it. Now, what I would do, though, is Verizon does allow you to change your plan.
Yeah.
And so I would go in, and there'll be a minimum plan that they'll permit because they've got to get back their $400 subsidy on your phone. So I would go to Verizon, and I would change the plan, and I would cut the number of minutes way down, as far down as they would allow you to do that.
The only problem with this, though, is that when you change the plan, you reset the odometer on your plan. So it's now you've got another 2 years once you've done that, right? I mean, every time I've done that, I've changed my plan, it resets the
odometer.
That
is just nasty. That is.
But that's AT&T, come to think of it. I don't know what Verizon.
I don't know. I think you may be right, Jim. But mm-hmm. actually, but see, it's been October of 2012. I mean, it hasn't been that long.
No, it hasn't.
So it's probably worth doing. Now the good news is that this iPhone 5 has both CDMA as well as GSM, and Verizon is selling the iPhone 5 with the GSM portion unlocked.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a resale value on that phone. So you'll be able to sell that phone easily for $200 or $300 after your plan is expired.
I was going to say, she can't sell the phone, just pay the plan. So she's, you know, downgrade the plan, pay the plan off, sell the phone, and get rid of the whole thing. And then
the
just
problem
eat
is
it.
Is that she still have the plan and the phone. The CDMA portion has her phone number on it.
Oh yeah.
So whoever has it could call on her plan.
Okay.
Now it's just the GSM doesn't have the phone number, and there's really no way to disable the CDMA part. So. Mm-hmm. So I don't really have good news, Margaret. It is a quandary. I would go back, and maybe you could find somebody at the store that could help you. Maybe they could give you some good advice. I don't know.
You know, that's the thing. Every day, there's a store that I go to, mm-hmm. and then, I mean, I have somebody that I go to all the time, so they kind of finagle things. Would that be the right word?
So it may be that they might be able to transfer your plan to a family member or something.
Yeah.
I mean, they do have a certain degree of flexibility, but... Mm-hmm. But if you're just going to dump them, I suspect they're not going to give you much flexibility.
Sure.
We got an email from Lauren in Bethesda. Dr. Schertz, for my home in December 2012, I bought an iMac. I've never used an Apple machine before, mm-hmm. and I want to install Office 2010 on my Mac. Now, the problem is, I don't want to buy another version of Office 2010. I've got a version of Office 2010 on my Windows machine, and I don't want to buy a new one for the Mac.
You can't, can you?
Well, I mean, there are ways to work around it. If you want to have a Mac, if you want to have an official Mac Windows version, you're going to have to buy it. There's no way around it. Now you could get academic software pricing if you've got a child in college, or if you work for a university, and if you've got anybody with a .edu email address, you can buy it at academic pricing.
Like, because I do Tech Talk Radio, I could get
you qualify. That's right. You have an association. Also, Andrew has an association with Stratford.
He's Professor Andrew. Yeah, so Professor. Of course, right
so
there, you know.
So both of you could get academic pricing, which essentially you get a full version at the upgrade price, mm-hmm. and so that's not a bad deal. Now. But what you have asked in further your email, you say you would like to then basically run a Windows program on the Mac. And there are two ways to do that. One, you could use the Boot Camp, which is a utility which is in the OS X operating system. And that mm-hmm. allows you to basically dual boot it. At boot up, you can choose either Windows or Mac operating system in Boot Camp. Now, here's the rub. You've got to install in the Windows, which means you need a licensed copy of Windows to install on the Mac.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't have an extra licensed copy of Windows on the Mac, it means you've got to buy a copy of on the Mac. Now, actually, if you read the small print on your Windows user agreement, you know, that's the agreement that nobody ever reads, it says you're allowed to install it twice. And the idea is you've got a desktop at work, you might have a laptop at home, and they know that people work in two places quite frequently. So Windows will authorize two installations of one piece of software. So you would be able to take the Windows, which is on your baseline machine, and install it again on the Mac as a second machine.
Mm-hmm.
And so you could certainly do that. And so you could use Boot Camp. Now, the problem with Boot Camp is every time you want to go back and forth, you got to take and turn off the machine. You got to reboot it. It's a pain in the neck. So a more convenient way to do it is to use virtualization. You could install VMware. And then what you can do is you don't have to reboot. You can just toggle back and forth between the two operating systems. And that's what you were suggesting that you may want to do. So VMware has quite a nice program that you could use for that. It's called VMware Fusion 5 is the mm-hmm. latest version. And with VMware Fusion 5, you can install that on the Mac, and then you could toggle back and forth between the Mac between the two virtual machines. Now, of course, when you have that second virtual machine, you're going to also have to install Windows mm-hmm. as the second copy. Now, you also then can install your Microsoft Office twice. So if you've got the virtual machine, you could install Microsoft Office, or you could toggle back and forth, and that's probably your best bet. Now, VMware Fusion is going to cost you $50. Whereas Boot Camp is free,
mm-hmm.
but I just think it's a lot easier to toggle back and forth instead of having to reboot. Because if you can toggle back and forth, it means that you can cut and paste between the two operating systems, you see, I think. I'm thinking you can do that. And so that might be a good option. Now, if you just don't want to mess with any of that, of course, you could just get OpenOffice. That's a free open-sourced alternative to Microsoft Office. It's available for both the Mac, OS X, and Windows. An OpenOffice features all the equivalent applications, including text, documents, spreadsheets, drawing presentations, databases, and blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. Everything you need. You can download a copy of OpenOffice from OpenOffice.org. It was a great question.
Can I have a sidebar
sure.
on this?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, suppose at some point I'm going to get an iPad and I want to be able to do documents on it. Everything that I have now is Office for Word for PC.
Yeah.
Can I save that stuff on the cloud somehow and then use it on my Apple machine if I use the OpenOffice application?
Yeah. But actually, I got here for my iPad, I just got like Pages, which was like $9.95,
mm-hmm.
and that will read a Word document.
So
I got Page, and they also have what they call Numbers, which is an Excel spreadsheet, and they also have They also have another document. So I've got two or three document programs that only cost $10 that go on the iPad.
But we'll let you read the document, yeah. but will it let you edit it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So you can.
It lets you edit it. It doesn't have all the features of Microsoft Word.
But the key to get it from the PC to the Mac is you got to save it on the cloud, right?
All right. I use Dropbox.
Oh.
I use Dropbox,
uh-huh.
and so anytime I save it here, it shows up in the other thing.
Oh,
I also save stuff on the iCloud.
That's a great idea.
So I've actually got two cloud solutions. I've got Dropbox and iCloud.
I like
so
Dropbox.
Some of the stuff I save in iCloud, I think Dropbox is great.
Mm-hmm.
So Dropbox is a subdirectory on the cloud, and you put a Dropbox subdirectory on your desktop, and anytime you want to transfer it to your iPad, just drag the document into that subdirectory and it synchronizes.
Mm-hmm.
So that works actually pretty well.
Cool.
And all of these document programs that I have, they will integrate with two or three different cloud solutions, and Dropbox is one of them.
Amazing.
We got an email from Ron. Dear Tech Talk, is there a better way to become a Linux expert than reading a book? Thanks, Ron. I mean, this is just a setup. Come on, Ron. I love this question. Ron, it is just a stupid way to learn stuff by reading a book. The best way to get to learn Linux is to just install it and play with it.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I do. I learn by playing. It's called learn by doing. But see, if you play while you're learning, if you have fun while you're learning, actually, science shows you that you actually learn better. So what you want to do is download Linux and just play with it. And you can download free versions of Linux. You can install it. If you've got your machine at home and you don't want to mess that up, just set up VMware. And you can set up a virtual Linux machine. And you can go over there and just play around with it. And then what you do, you use the book as kind of a reference guide. When you get stuck on something, you just go to the index and you look up what you're stuck on. And it's useful as kind of a reference guide. But to sit there and read the book cover to cover is really, kind of a waste of time, I have to say. And
mm-hmm.
so these guys that write these books just want to sell books. But the best way to do it is just to play with it. Almost every piece of software that I've learned, any kind of programming language that I've learned, I've just sort of started doing it and learned it by doing it. It's the best way to do it. We got an email from Hawk in Bowie. Oh, Hawk's one of
frequent
our regular
writers,
listeners.
Yes.
Frequent listener, listeners in Bowie. Dear Doc and Jim, I recently got an iPhone 4S. I love all the features, particularly FaceTime and iMessage. However, I don't like the fact that every time I receive a text message, it's displayed right on the iPhone home screen. Even if my iPhone is locked, sometimes I'd rather keep my text messages private, especially when I'm at a meeting or my iPhone's on the table. I'm not going to ask any questions,
no,
Jim.
We don't ask questions.
We're not going to
ask
any
tell.
Questions.
Don't
I mean, some people
tell.
Want to keep their text messages as private. It's really up
well,
to them.
Well, there's an easy way to turn this off, isn't there?
There is.
You actually have to turn it on first.
Is there a way to turn off these notifications? I've been a loyal listener for years. My husband and I love the show, especially Profiles in IT. Hawk in Bowie. Well, actually, Hawk, this is a common complaint for iPhone users. They just hate having all their business flashed on the home screen
mm-hmm.
all the time. Fortunately, you can easily change this. What you want to do, go to Settings, and then click on Notifications. Now, scroll down to it'll list all your applications and how they're integrated with notifications. Scroll down to Messages, because this is where this is the program that controls text messages. Then what you want to do, you set the notification center off. That's that pull-down screen with notifications. Then you go to alert style and select none. chances are that you've got the alert style, which just puts the message right in the middle of the screen. Yeah. If you just check none, there's no alert. Now, you can leave the badge icon on. The badge icon is that little thing, that little number that tells you how many unread messages you have. Now, if you don't want people to know that you've got an unread message, you can turn the badge icon off, and it doesn't even show you've got an unread message. But I leave my badge icon on because I like to know if there's an unread message.
Yeah, me too.
But I just don't like everything flashing on the screen, so I've got my notifications off. Then you can also set the text tone to off so that when messages come in, they don't actually make a beep. And finally, you can set preview to off so that you can't see what's in the text message until you open it up. So these are, and so every program you can control how it interacts with notifications. I'll tell you what I did. The reason I turned off all my notifications, Jim, is I became a phonaholic. Yeah. I go to meetings and I'm tinkering with my phone, and it's just so distracting because it's like beeping and buzzing and vibrating all the time, and I'd be looking at it. You know, so we went off to a management retreat, and this is one of my problems. So they brought to that management retreat. They brought to that management retreat. This is that Stratford had a cell phone jail, and any time that I was playing with my phone inappropriately, they would lock up my iPhone jail and they'd set the timer, and I couldn't get it out for an hour.
Is there an appropriate way to play with your iPhone during a meeting?
No.
Okay.
There is no appropriate way to play with your iPhone. So what? And the thing is, with all these, when my phone was like beeping, ringing, flashing, you know, I could hardly concentrate.
Sure.
So I went in and I just turned off all these stinking notifications. And you know, my life is just a lot calmer now. I only look at the stuff when I want to.
Mm-hmm.
So I highly recommend it, not just for privacy reasons, but for sanity reasons.
You know what I do?
What do you do?
I use a little switch on the side, turn the sound off, and then I put it upside down on the desk the way I can't see it.
Yeah, but Jim, it still vibrates unless you turn that off.
That's a good point.
It still vibrates. And Jim, and I can hear that vibration.
Oh,
and
yeah, you can.
And I put the phone in my pocket, I can feel the vibration.
You feel the vibration, sure.
Yeah, so there you go. Oh, so anyway, that's just a little, I don't know. I didn't even know how I even got into that, Jim, but you know, it's okay.
Hawk needed to know.
That's Hawk needed to know because, you know, she's got to keep her text messages private. We got an email from Leslie. Dear Doc.
Mm-hmm.
My new laptop does not have a CD drive, and I have some programs on CD, such as MS Office and Dreamweaver, which I want to run or update onto my new machine. How can I install them? Thanks, Leslie. Well, actually, the PC that I bought doesn't have a CD drive either, because I figured it's just not worth it. Most of the stuff you can download programs from the web, or You could set your computer up on a network, and then you could share one of the CD drives from another computer. But probably the easiest thing to do is just get another computer with the CD drive and copy the CD onto a USB.
Mm-hmm.
And you can install it right from the USB. So you just basically copy the entire CD to the USB drive. I would recommend that you get an empty USB. I mean, empty thumb drive.
Right.
And then copy the entire CD on it. And then when you go to the thumb drive, you'll come up with Internet Explorer, and you'll look around, and you'll find in the root directory of that file an executable file, which is basically the install file. Just click on it, and it'll just start installing right there from the USB drive. That'll work in most cases. Actually, I've never had to do anything with mine, because once you get all your software installed on the initial go, you never really use a CD anymore. So, but that was a great question. I got rid of my CD drive because I simply don't want that extra weight when I haul it around.
I remember there was a day we talked about on the show, the day that CDs would become yesterday's technology, and nobody would have them anymore.
It's not quite
there yet, but it's possible for...
It's getting pretty close.
Yeah.
It's getting pretty close. I mean, all this cloud computing, everything is synchronized over the web. You just don't need anything like that
What's
anymore.
What's it been? The CDs have only been around, 20 years now? Because we did an anniversary thing on the CD. It's maybe 20, a little more than that. It's
I mean, look at the floppy drive. It's dead.
Oh, my God, yeah.
It's dead. So now it's all the cloud. It's all synchronizing on the cloud. And they don't even, when you buy a new machine, they don't even give you install CDs anymore. You know,
it's all in the cloud.
It's all in the cloud. That's right.
Wow. Amazing. Well, we thank you for listening this morning to Tech Talk Radio. Now, Doc, you are not going to get off light over there because you're not just operating the classroom or the airways. You're doing
other things. Monitoring our Facebook page. So go to facebook.com/techtalkonline. If you've got any comments about Tech Talk, just leave them there on the page, and we might talk about your comments during the show. Also, we love your emails. Send us emails to techtalk@stratford.edu.
This is Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2. More Tech Talk right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Application and software developers shape our world. Those who design and build these systems are the leaders we follow. The School of Computer Information Systems at Stratford University's Tysons Corner or Woodbridge campus offers programs with a real-world, hands-on education. In fact, many of today's Stratford IT grads are working in their chosen field. Make it work for you. Stratford University. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu. A rewarding future as a holistic caregiver or nurse practitioner. Combining the art of caring with the human science makes nursing today's breakout field. Stratford University's School of Nursing at the Tysons Corner or Woodbridge campus offers a patient-centered approach with valuable core clinical training. Stratford provides a real-world education in nursing. In fact, many of today's Stratford nursing grads are working in their chosen fields. Make it work for you. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And now it is time for...
Profiles in IT.
Yes, today we're talking about Raymond Samuel Tomlinson. That's what his mom called him. Raymond Samuel Tomlinson.
That's what they call serial killers. They use all three of their names,
don't they? They use all three names, yeah. Raymond Samuel Tomlinson is a U.S. programmer who implemented an email system in 1971 on the ARPANET. Tomlinson was born in Amsterdam, New York. In 1941, his family moved to a small, unincorporated village of Vail Mills, New York. He attended Brattleben Central School in nearby Brattleben. Have you ever heard of Brattleben?
I've never heard of, I'm going to look that up while you're talking.
Brattleben. I had never heard of that before. It's the heart.
Heart and soul of Brattleben County.
That must be where broadband started in Brattleben. In Brattleben, New York. Later, he attended the Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, RPI, in Troy, New York, where he participated in a co-op program with IBM. He received a Bachelor of Science degree in Electrical Engineering from RPI in 1963. After graduating from RPI, he entered MIT to continue his electrical engineering studies. At MIT, Tomlinson worked in the speech communication group and developed an analog digital hybrid speech synthesizer is the subject of his master's thesis. He received his master's degree in electrical engineering in 1965, and then he joined Bolt, Beranek, and Newman, now called BBN Technologies, where he developed the 10X operating system, T-E-N-E-X operating system, including the ARPANET network control protocol and the Telnet implementations. See, back there, BBN, as they're now called, was one of the key contractors in the development of the ARPANET, and they were developing some of the hosts, which were nodes of the ARPANET. That was the ARPANET, of course, was the precursor of the Internet. Did you find
I did. Do you want to know what Brattleben? You want to know what the nickname of Brattleben is?
What?
The bin.
The bin.
It's just.
He's just the bin. He grew up in the bin.
In the bin. Let's see. It is a town of a little over 5,000 people. It is located just east of Albany, New York.
Okay, well, that's where Raymond Samuel grew up, in the bin.
It was part of this Sacandaga Patent of 1741, if you really wanted to dig way back.
So anyway, he was working a beat. Let's get back to the
I'm
show,
sorry
Jim.
For the
come on, Jim.
You told me to do that.
Okay, Jim. Let me get back.
I'm a geography major. Okay. The classroom of the airwaves.
So he was working at BBN. They were working on one of the main nodes of the ARPANET, and he was developing software for that node, including the 10X operating system and the NCP, the network control protocol for this node, as well as some Telnet applications. This is sort of remote. You know, Telnet is like communicating with a computer over a telephone line network, kind of sort of Telnet into a communicate. And he was working on Telnet communications with the computers. Tomlinson was experimenting with a popular program that he wrote called Send Message, and he wrote this thing, and what they were able to do using Send Message. You could leave a message for somebody else working on your same computer. Back then, the nodes were PDP-10s. And so two people working on the same computer, they could work on the thing, and then they could send a message to one of the other people on that computer. And when their friend logs onto the computer at a later time, he could pick up his message. So you had kind of the ability to send messages within one computer. But that was just like a local message program. You could only leave messages on the computer where you were working and the person had to log into that computer. Well, Tomlinson used the file transfer protocol that is working on another program called CYPNET, C-Y-P-N-E-T. And this was the file transfer protocol is a way to transfer files from one node to another. So what he did, he used the file transfer protocol to transfer files from computer A to computer B. He combined it with send message. See, this is kind of a good idea. So then you'd send a message, and it would create the message, the message block. And then he would use Telnet to send it to another computer, and he would put it in the send message queue of the other computer. So mm-hmm. he was able to send a message to another computer. That's kind of the rudiments of the basic email. Now, in order to tell his program which computer to send it to, he invented this symbol, the ampersand, so it would see, send it to Jim at WTOP, which might be the name of the computer. And
sure.
so the at was the name of the computer, and the user's name would say Jim. And so they have username at the computer. And so he was able then, using that simple nomenclature, to actually send a message to another computer. And that was the rudiments of the first email, and that became then the sort of the core of the, you know, of the whole email and the most popular application on the ARPANET and later on in the internet. Now, when he did his first email message to another computer, he didn't really think it was a big deal. I mean, he said, so what, you know, mm-hmm. because he was sending it to another computer that was just sitting right beside him. He had two PDPs side by side, so he took and he sent the message 2 feet. He said, yeah,
well,
what's the big deal here?
Right, exactly.
I mean, you know, so,
why get crazy?
So when Tomlinson showed it to his colleague, Jerry Birchfield, he says, you know, Jerry, this isn't much, but don't tell anybody I'm working on it because actually I'm not supposed to be working on this. I'm charging my time to another contract. So, so please, just don't tell anybody.
Keep
it quiet. They didn't keep it quiet and it ultimately became a big deal. In 2012, Tomlinson was inducted into the Internet Hall of Fame by the Internet Society, Raymond Samuel Tomlinson. He's one of these guys who was one of the innovators on the Internet. He's one of these sort of these foundational guys mm-hmm. who actually never made a lot of money out of it.
I was just going to say, this. We talked about this delineation mm-hmm. last year, the foundational guys and the people that have taken all of this
That's
stuff
right.
and then found out how to make money with it.
That's exactly right. So he didn't make any money with it. And he also, people said, well, what did that first email message say? And he says, well, you know, I'd like to tell you, but I can't actually remember. He said it was so insignificant, he can't even remember
probably
what it was.
Test.
He probably just said, you know, ABCD. It was probably just test or something.
He just mashed on the keyboard for a little bit.
Yeah, and so he doesn't really remember what it was. He wish he had some really great story about that, but he doesn't. So there you go. Raymond Samuel Tomlinson, the man who came up with the idea of the email
Watson,
message.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Information you just listened to could win you a free lunch. There is a free lunch out there.
There is a free lunch at Tech Talk. Even at Tech Talk, you get a free lunch.
What you need to do is, when we ask a special question coming up here in just a moment or so, you'll need to be fast with your dialing finger. Well, the pop quiz is coming up next here on Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2. Be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Technology is constantly changing. An effective IT manager must not only understand the possibilities and limitations of the technology, but also the requirements and constraints of the business world. Enhance your career today with a master's degree from Stratford University School of Computer Information Systems. Classes are offered day, evening, and weekends to match your busy schedule and are taught by experienced faculty members with industry experience. Earn your master's degree in as little as 15 months with an accelerated program in software engineering, information systems, information assurance, or telecommunications. Learn more about earning your master's degree from Stratford University at stratford.edu or call 1-800-444-0804. Disclose statements available at stratford.edu/disclosures. Stratford University, 1-800-444-0804.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
It's time for Washington's most popular and longest-running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now, here's your host and star of our show. No, it's not Gene Rayburn.
It's not Alex Trebek.
It's not Richard Dawson. It's Dr. Richard Schertz.
For those of you that have listened for a long time, you know this is not really a radio show.
No, it's not.
This is a classroom of the airwaves.
Much to my chagrin, it's
not. Also a classroom of the streaming internet ways. Now,
internet ways? That's
yes.
A new one. The interwebs?
The interweb. It's like a new word.
Okay.
If you were listening earlier in this show, we were talking about Raymond Samuel Tomlinson. He, of course, is the man who developed the email. What is the nickname of Tomlinson's hometown, that small town where he grew up? What is the nickname of that town? If you get the correct answer to this pop quiz, you'll get two tickets to fine dining at the Escoffier Dining Room or the Karim Dining Room. And you'll have a fantastic five-course meal.
Wow, that sounds great. And may even tide you over to dinner from the sound.
That's exactly
okay.
Right.
Now, in order to win the prize, you have to contact us. And the best way to do that is to dial us on your POTS line, your plain old telephone phone thingy. And the number is
plain old telephone system.
Exactly right. Well, thank you for correcting me, Professor.
That's right.
If you're calling us from west of the Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute in Troy, New York, it's 877-936-9333. East of the Blizzard Zone in Boston, Massachusetts, it's 877-936-9333. The wild card line is 877-936-9333. Or
if you're calling from Borneo, you can connect with us on Skype. Simply go to Tech Talk Radio 1 and you're call from Borneo will be forwarded directly to the studio free of charge.
877-936-9333. I say the winner's going to call on that.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about Chinese New Year.
Okay.
This is going to be the, you know, I was going to celebrate, but now I'm just going to sit and meditate during the Chinese New Year.
That's a good thing to do.
That's right. Of course, Chinese New Year is Sunday, February 10th, and this year, after the New Year, it will be the Year of the Snake. Now, why is the Chinese New Year a different time from the regular New Year? What's going on with all of that?
Please tell us.
Well, let's talk a little bit about calendars. First of all, you have the lunar calendars. Now, the lunar calendars are based on the natural cycles of the moon, where they go from, you know, new moon to full moon back to new moon, and new moon to new moon would be then one lunar month. And so that would be the lunar calendar. And, of course, in the beginning, people just watched the moon, and they would base a calendar on that. For instance, the Muslim calendar is a lunar calendar. Then you've got the solar calendars. Now, the solar calendars are basically based on cycles of the season because, you see, it takes 1 year for the Earth to go all the way around the sun.
Mm-hmm.
And now because the sun is tilted at an angle on its axis relative to the rotation plane around the sun, when it's on one side of the sun, the northern hemisphere is closer to the sun because of the tilt, and so you get summer. And then when it goes to the other side of the sun, the southern hemisphere is closer to the sun, so then it's summer on the southern hemisphere and winter on the northern hemisphere. So the solar calendar more or less aligns with the seasons, as you would expect. And so solar calendars, basically are always in synchrony with the seasons. And so you've got two different kinds of calendars, solar calendars, lunar calendars. Now, it turns out the Chinese calendar is kind of a hybrid. It's a lunisolar calendar. It's a lunisolar. Have you ever heard that term before?
Not until this very second.
This calendar is pretty much a lunisolar calendar.
Is that a real term?
Yeah, it is. It's a lunisolar calendar.
I've learned something. I've learned the bin. And I've learned lunisolar calendar.
And so what happens is that in a lunisolar calendar, you have the months that roughly align with the lunar calendar.
Mm-hmm.
But then you try to adjust the length of the year to keep in synchrony with the seasons. So sometimes the Chinese calendar has 12 months, and sometimes it has 13 months.
Really?
So they keep adjusting the number of months so that it stays sort of globally in synchrony with the seasons.
Uh-huh.
So the endpoints more or less align with the seasons, but then the months kind of align with the lunar calendar, so it's lunisolar. So you had no idea of that.
I kind of like where we are.
And so the Chinese calendar is used for many celebrations like the Chinese New Year, like mm-hmm. the Duan Wu Festival. You do a lot of Duan Wu Festival stuff,
I do
stuff,
not.
Jim?
I have never been to the Duan Wu Festival, but I hear their music is great.
Or else the Mid-Autumn Festival.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is actually the Chinese New Year. Now, it's also frequently called the Spring Festival.
Ah.
So you see, their Chinese New Year, I mean, you say, well, why did they pick it now? Because they picked it roughly at the beginning of spring, you see. So it's the Spring Festival.
You know, and actually, when we get to February, I keep thinking we're in the home stretch. We're almost there, right?
I think so, too. Now, technically, it is when you have a dark moon, which is near the vernal beginning.
Mm-hmm.
You've heard, like, the vernal equinox.
Sure.
So this
right.
is like the dark moon near the vernal beginning is when we have the Chinese New Year. So there you go. Pretty much all you ever wanted to know about calendars. And I'm never going to bring it up again.
No, I think it's fascinating.
Okay.
And it's really confusing, but it's definitely fascinating. Doc, you're going to love this. We have new people on the line.
Yeah, very good.
Let's go to line two. This is Jubilee calling from Riverdale, Maryland. Jubilee, good morning. How are you?
Great. How are you?
Good. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. Speak up a little tough to hear you.
That's right, yeah.
Okay, Doc, go ahead and ask the
question.
Okay,
earlier in the show I was talking about Raymond Samuel Tomlinson. What was the nickname of his hometown?
It was Ben.
That is correct.
Jubilee, you're the winner.
That is
correct.
Church, you win two tickets to Fine Dining, the Scoffy at Aaron Karem Dining Room. Just stay on the line and give your address and email address to Andrew, and we'll get the tickets out to you next
week. Jubilee, you are clearly a first-time caller. Have you been listening to us for long?
I've been listening for a year, but I try to get it every Saturday, but sometimes it's hard. But it's been very fascinating.
Gotcha. How did you find out about the show?
A colleague of mine told me about the TED Talk, and then I just listened on Saturday one day, and I just heard you guys, and I was like, oh, this is fascinating.
That's great. Well, we're glad you listened. Maybe you should bring your colleague to lunch with you as a thank you. Thanks for listening. We appreciate your call.
You.
Have a great day. And you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. This is Federal News Radio on 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2. We'll be back with more Tech Talk right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
A
budget analyst, a vice president of sales. These are today's business leaders, and a degree from Stratford University's Tyson's Corner or Woodbridge campus offers you a powerful path to navigate the corporate world. The School of Business Administration at Stratford University offers both bachelor's and master's degree programs for a real-world education. In fact, many of today's Stratford business grads are working in their chosen fields. Make it work for you. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu. An executive chef at a trendy restaurant, a hotel general manager at a prestigious resort. These are the high-profile positions in the culinary arts and hospitality management industry. Get working towards your bachelor's or master's degree at Stratford University's Tyson's Corner or Woodbridge campus. In fact, many of today's Stratford culinary arts and hospitality grads are working in their chosen fields. Make it work for you. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. Well, they found out the cause of the big blackout on the Super Bowl.
They did.
Entergy, New Orleans. Entergy, that's the name of the energy company. Entergy.
Well, that's the first problem.
Yeah, yes. Whoever came up with that, they need to rebrand it. Entergy. Yeah, I don't like that, but, you know, it's okay. Entergy, New Orleans, announced Friday that that a power relay was responsible for the power
failure. You mean like one of those big power strips with a surge protector in it?
Listen, this power relay had been installed to protect the Superdome from cable failure between the company's incoming lines and the lines that run into the stadium. So it actually was kind of a fail-safe device. It was there to protect the system.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, the device failed. This device has since been removed because it actually wasn't needed. It was supposed to be sort of help protect the system. So they just removed it, and they plan to replace it, but with one that's not going to fail next time.
That's a good idea.
Now, the power failure stopped the game between the Ravens and San Francisco in the third quarter and seemed to switch the momentum. That's what I
Indeed
thought.
It did, yeah.
Actually, if Ravens would have lost, I would have been totally teed off because it wouldn't have been right. Now, the Super Bowl never actually went completely dark. A few banks of lights remained on throughout the delay, but the light was dim and the scoreboards were black.
Mm-hmm.
And CBS lost most of its ability to broadcast the game. That's probably the real reason why it didn't continue.
Yeah.
Entergy and SMG, which manages the Super Bowl, had upgraded the electrical lines and other equipment in the months before the Super Bowl. The faulty delay was part of a $4.2 million upgrade by Entergy. They're probably going to have to find that contractor. Entergy officials were scheduled to appear before a committee just yesterday to explain the blackout to the city council. Now, I also read some people that were experts on, you know, backup systems. They could have actually had two backup generators on semi-trailer trucks there that could have actually handled all the power requirements.
But
would have cost maybe $10 million
probably
to have that in place.
Now, you know, I was just thinking, I would love to have been in the meeting where the vendor for this piece of equipment gets reamed by the Superdome people. Can you imagine what that's going to be like? Good grief. And during the week, I work for the flagship station or the radio for the Baltimore Ravens. In fact, Andrew, I believe those games are also aired on this station, are they not? Andrew, I don't think is... The Ravens games, are they aired on this station still? We used to air them. Anyway, so you know how they did the
you know,
the
our back office is going to have to start paying attention
I
to
know.
The show.
You know how the game, they continue to be on the air after the power went out? Cell phone. The chief engineer, as soon as the lights went out, dialed in to the radio station, and they passed the phone back and forth, and they just talked for, 35, 40 minutes?
That was actually pretty resourceful.
And somebody else in the radio station was there, and they just dialed that phone in and left it connected in case they lost another connection. Because you can only imagine what the data would have been like. You know, the cell – you talked last week about how they had beefed up the Wi-Fi
Right. They beefed up the Wi-Fi to handle 30,000 simultaneous connections. But you can see if everybody were on their cell phone, you may not be able to get a connection. So they had to be very careful. Now, I watched it also streaming.
Did you?
So
what
was
that like?
So I streamed it. I went to the CBS website and I streamed it with my iPad.
You had it on your regular TV at home and you streamed it.
And I streamed it. And it was kind of interesting because the streaming was about a minute delayed.
Really?
But... But the sound, because I have these noise cancellation headphones, the sound was better with my iPad than,
really?
Than from the TV.
Huh.
So, you know, so I listened like to that halftime, thing by Beyonce. And I thought, you know, the music got to sound better than it. Because the music didn't sound very good to me. I thought maybe I'm missing something.
Mm-hmm.
So then I, because of the one-minute delay, I just listened to it on my iPad.
It sounded better on your iPad.
Well, it didn't sound much better. I don't think the music was that good with the Beyonce's.
No. Know,
the dancing was okay. The music was not that good. But the other nice thing was I could actually... Actually, then if I missed a play, I could then look at it on my iPad, and it was a one-minute delay.
Mm-hmm.
So that worked out quite nicely. Now let's talk about some of the ads a little bit. Now I'm only going to talk about the tech ads.
Right.
Okay, now we've already said that the least favorite tech ad was that GoDaddy ad. Oh, my God, that. Bar Raffaele, the supermodel, was supposed to highlight GoDaddy's slogan, "When sexy meets smart." But I'm telling you, that guy with the red splotches on his face didn't really look smart.
He looked dorky, and all that did was gross me out. And
it grossed
me
out.
Makes me not want to use GoDaddy.
But I can tell you, if I'd ask you, name me one registrar in the United States, could you name one other than GoDaddy?
No.
So it actually, Jim, your objections, it actually is working.
There is no bad publicity, is there?
No, it's no bad publicity. Okay, now, my favorite ad was this Best Buy ad, this Ann Poehler.
Mm-hmm.
She's from Parks and Recreations, ex-Saturday Night Live person.
Uh-huh.
She started rattling off these rapid-fire consumer questions to these Best Buy clerks, and she was, like, harassing them sexually.
Mm-hmm.
And so my favorite line from this, she says, "Can I use a dongle with this? Does it make you uncomfortable when I use the word dongle?"
Yeah, that made me chuckle.
I love that ad.
That was pretty
good. Now, my weirdest ad was this BlackBerry ad.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they tried to show what a phone was not. They had a guy using his new BlackBerry Z10. They used it to set himself on fire. Then he used it to grow elephant legs. And then he magically turned an out-of-control big rig into a bunch of exploding pile of rubber duckies. Now, I was sitting here, and those are all the things you can't do with the phone.
Uh-huh.
And then he ended up blowing up in kind of a puff of colored smoke.
Which is the best thing that could happen to him.
Yeah, you can't do that. So that was probably the dumbest tech ad I've ever seen, and I don't know if it really helped BlackBerry. So that
probably
was my
not.
Rundown there, but
mm-hmm.
kind of interesting. And let me have one more thing before the break.
Okay.
The course of the week.
Yes.
I love this course. It is a free course, by the way. It's a creative learning course from MIT.
Mm-hmm.
It's a course on how to learn. You see, I've always believed that, you know, people have to be continuous learners. And this is a course about learning. It's learning creative learning. Get this. Learning how to have creative learning. And it's offered by the MIT Media Lab, and it introduces ideas and strategies for designing technologies that support creative learning. And I'm telling you, people, what you learn after you get out of school is what really counts. See, school should show you how to learn, and then you continue to learn when you get out of school. And so they're going to have, they decided to open up the seminars, the course materials, the hands-on activities to anybody who's got a computer and internet access. Each week, the course will focus on particular topics relating to creative learning, like interbased learning, powerful ideas, tinkering. You know, I talked about tinkering on the Linux. I mean, I'm a big believer in learning continuously, learning creatively. I love this thing.
Well, that's what Stratford's all about.
Right? All of our classes are like that, and and so we're going to do a lot of that stuff there at Stratford. And this particular class highlights that. This is an MIT class. It's free, so I thought I'd just sort of let you know about it. Learn.media.mit.edu. You can sign up for that free online class, and I think it's just pretty good. I just was really taken by this, so I thought I would feature it this week on the class the course of the week.
That sounds interesting. May I, at this juncture, offer you conversely the dumbest course of the week that I heard about this week? There's somebody in Baltimore offering, I kid you not, Facebook class.
Oh, my God.
How to learn to use Facebook.
That's pathetic.
It is. We're not pathetic. We're in Tech Talk Radio. We're on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, and we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
application and software developers shape our world. Those who design and build these systems are the leaders we follow. The School of Computer Information Systems at Stratford University's Tyson's Corner or Woodbridge campus offers programs with a real-world, hands-on education. In fact, many of today's Stratford IT grads are working in their chosen field. Make it work for you. Stratford University. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu. A rewarding future as a holistic caregiver or nurse practitioner. Combining the art of caring with the human science makes nursing today's breakout field. Stratford University's School of Nursing at the Tyson's Corner or Woodbridge campus offers a patient-centered approach with valuable core clinical training. Stratford provides a real-world education in nursing. In fact, many of today's Stratford nursing grads are working in their chosen fields. Make it work for you. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. Now let's talk about the top seven tech skills for 2013. These are useful for you guys that want to enter tech or want to advance your career. Mm-hmm. The number one here is cloud computing. Companies are looking for software developers who specialize in things like virtualization, software as a service, and are familiar with platform as a service technologies. According to one survey of IT execs, 25% of companies are planning on hiring people with software as a service background and related cloud computing expertise in 2013. IT project management, one of the most sought after tech skills, isn't really technical. Certified project managers can earn six-figure income. That's why 40% of IT executives are looking to hire project managers. I mean, there is a statement, you know, IT guys can't manage themselves out of a paper bag. There's a lot of truth to that. Mm-hmm. So if you can excel in project management, you're going to move up quickly. JavaScript and related technologies, number three. On the web, JavaScript is what makes things interactive, especially now that we have the rise of tablets and smartphones and that Flash has fallen out of favor. Whether it's jQuery framework or JSON, data exchange standards, companies need JavaScript talents. JSON is the most sought-after skill. JSON stands for JavaScript Object Notation, by the way. It's a lightweight data interchange format. It's easy for humans to read and write and easy for machines to parse and generate. Java, or J2EE. J2EE stands for Java 2 Platform Enterprise Edition. Java and J2EE development platforms are popping up with more and more job hiring boards. Java J2EE developers are going to be in high demand throughout 2013, according to a survey from DICE. PHP and MySQL. This is an open source scripting language that runs on more than 20 million websites. Our current website is all .NET technology. Our last website was all PHP, MySQL. I wrote all the PHP for that. This was,
wow.
And I'll tell you, PHP is a fun language to learn. If you're going to learn a programming language, it's a scripting language. It's pretty good. A lot of websites use that, PHP, MySQL, including Facebook and Wikipedia.
Wow.
Also, our online platform, Moodle, uses PHP MySQL. That's why I like it. It's all open source. Any blogs or news sites or other websites built using WordPress or Drupal are using that, too. Then, of course, we've got the iOS development for applications for the phone, as well, of course, the next version of HTML, HTML5, and cascading style sheets that are used for the interactive web. Those are the top technology lineups. Hey, the show's almost over.
It is.
Listen, go to stratford.edu, check out our programs, and let them know that you heard about them on Tech Talk, and we love your emails. Email us at techtalk@stratford.edu and go to techtalkonline.com and download our podcast. We're also on Apple iTunes.
And we do indeed thank you for listening today. The show will be rebroadcast tomorrow at 7 p.m.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program. WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of Washington Nationals baseball, Washington Capitals hockey, the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, and American University Eagles basketball. Federal News Radio 1500 AM, the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics and your source for federal news now.
Sports on the air later today. We have both the GW basketball and Capitals hockey. It's going to be sunny, cold, high in the 30s today. Right now, 10 o'clock in D.C.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take